welcome to Two Modern Mystics with your co-hosts, Dawn Fleming and Linda Robach, who are here to offer you a deeper perspective of what is really going on and how you can disconnect from the chaos and plug into a higher consciousness.
Welcome to Two Modern Mystics. I am Dawn Fleming. I just want to thank everyone for joining us today and sharing your light. We are so happy that we have Tom Ballas with us today, sharing on the topic of how we can become a healing presence. Before we move into our topic, I want to introduce my co-host, Linda Robach. Linda is a true mystic and an amazing light. Linda shares her wisdom and energy to help people find peace and to heal. She empowers her clients to live their truth. We have shared so much together on this journey of energy healing and of just having a beautiful friendship. And it is just such an honor to be doing this show with her. Hello, Linda.
Hello, Dawn, and thank you so much. I will just echo what you said back at you. So how wonderful it is, dear friend, to be doing this show with you. And I honor the light that you shine so brightly. And it certainly has been a beacon for me and for many others. Also, I know that when you share your gifts as a medical intuitive, as a Reiki master, an educator, an author, I know that transformation occurs. And you are a fabulous, dependable, and creative co-host. And it is such a joy to work with you. You are an example of someone who lives in alignment with their truth.
Wow. Thank you, Linda. That was amazing. Thank you.
So our topic today is, as you said earlier, is on being a healing presence. And I am so excited and happy to have Tom Ballas as our guest. Tom personifies our topic today. He is that healing presence. I always feel it when I come around him. And his latest book, Becoming a Healing Presence, A Guide for Those Who Offer Care, is one I recommend for anyone who's caring for another individual or expects to care for someone in the future. I just experienced the death of a dear friend a few days ago, and Tom's book gives such clarity and practical suggestions to those tending others in difficult situations. I was able to have a deep, honest, I'm going to say freeing conversation with her before she passed, and I am forever grateful. So a little bit about Tom that I know. He's been a practicing acupuncturist for 30 years and has been teaching in graduate degree programs at Thai Sophia Institute, and that's in Maryland. It's now renamed. It's now the Maryland University of Integrative Health, and he's been teaching in programs there for 20 years, and during that time, he had served as dean of faculty of the acupuncture program. He's an award-winning educator at the Maryland University of Integrative Health, and he's also the author of another book, which I'm going to mention right now, and Tom, you can later mention, Dancing with the 10,000 Things. And a friend and I have used that in a retreat as we are calling each other and calling people to fullness of life, the fullness of life. So we are so honored that Tom is joining us today. So welcome, Tom.
Well, thank you, Dawn, and thank you, Linda, both. It's a pleasure to be here with you today. You had asked if I had any opening words and opening thoughts, and I'm going to borrow from a page in the first book that I wrote. And it says this. This is the declaration: that the potential for healing exists in each one of us, in every moment, in every role we play, in every relationship we have, in every conversation that takes place and in every profession and institution that we serve. So those are some opening thoughts. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Well, thank you. Those are beautiful words. So, Tom, tell us a little bit about your own background and how the work with Healing Presence came about.
Well, I began studying acupuncture in 1982 in Columbia, Maryland. It was called at that time the Traditional Acupuncture Institute. And when graduating, I practiced in both Tahoe City in California for 3 years, and then came back to San Francisco where I had been living and practiced there for another 7 or 8 years. And I contacted my school, the Traditional Acupuncture Institute, and I said if I came back east, would I be able to teach in the acupuncture program? And that offer was accepted. So I began teaching in the acupuncture program in 1996 and have continued to teach in the graduate degree programs there ever since. And around 2000, 2001, we really began to see that people who were being treated in the acupuncture school, patients, clients, family members, friends, really became aware that there was another conversation that was going on in the treatment rooms that was much bigger than just acupuncture. And people began to sort of have a great interest in the philosophy, the distinctions in language, the practices that were being evolved. And we came to sort of have a nice phrase for these folks. It's like they didn't want to come. They weren't coming to the Institute to put in needles. They wanted to be the needle in whatever domains of life that they participated. So whether that was sitting around the dinner table with family members, whether it was like in their network of friends or the workplace, organizations that they participated in or community life as a whole, they wanted to make a contribution. We use the word telos, which comes from the Greek, and it is translated as end or purpose or goal. And my way of working with it is to say sort of for the sake of what? What is it that even gets us out of bed in the morning? And I say for most of us, it's really engagement with life. It's engagement with other people. And it's the care and tending and assisting each other to forward life, not just for ourselves, but others around us. So whether that be family members or friends or coworkers, and that's a part of a meaningful life. So that's the notion of healing presence. I wrote my first book, Dancing with the 10,000 Things, back in 2003. And it was really for some of the students in the other programs that we had created. So we had a program in applied healing arts, and we had a program in transformative leadership and social change. And as we've progressed into being a university, it's expanded. There are now graduate degree programs, either master's degrees or doctorate degrees, in acupuncture, Chinese herbs, Western herbs, nutrition, yoga therapy, health coaching, and health promotion and policy. So the notion of being a healing presence sort of weaves its way through all of those different programs. And that's where it came from, and that's how it is at the moment.
Wow. I'm really would love it if you could explain what you mean when you use the term healing presence. Like, what is your working definition of it?
I did do a working definition in my first book, and it goes like this. To be a healing presence is to be cultivating distinct ways of being and doing and speaking that serve life and the lives of those around us.
Wow.
That's beautiful. So, yeah, let's take that a step further. So in your definition, what do you mean by cultivating distinct ways of being, doing, and speaking?
Well, cultivating is really the notion of being in practice. It's to really look at it as a verb, not a noun. So it's practicing, cultivating distinct ways. And when I say ways of being and doing and speaking, one way to imagine it, you could sort of be drawing it in your mind's eye as three circles. So ways of being is one circle, ways of doing is another, ways of speaking. And they overlap each other, just like the logo for the Olympics. And by ways of being, what do I mean by that? It means that we have the ability to really open our senses inward. So it's being aware of what's going on inside our skin. So it's being aware of our moods, our feelings, the different thoughts we have, the self-talk that we might engage in, the certitudes that we operate out of, and physical sensations as well, feelings in our heart, feelings in our gut. And so ways of being is to be accountable for and responsible for those as well. So it's taking on ways to learn how to manage those, because as we all know, you know, how we be is contagious. Our emotions can be contagious. Our moods, both positive and negative, are contagious. They affect people around us. They influence each other. They influence other people. Ways of doing that circle is really the whole notion of being in practice. It's opening our senses outward. So it's to say, okay, what am I seeing now as I look outside rather than inside, as I'm hearing what's going on around me, as I'm sensing what's going on around me, what do I notice? What do I observe? And in particular, in our ways of doing, it's really to take a look and be aware of how am I being received? So with the actions that I take in the world, when I speak, what's happening around me? Are people paying attention? Are they with me? Are their arms crossed? Are they turning away? Are they rolling their eyes? So it is being aware, opening our senses outward to life outside us. And one of the things that's involved in our ways of doing is learning to transform sort of care and compassion into effective action. So it is very possible that we care a lot about something, we're very compassionate, and yet sometimes our actions are not very effective. They don't help to move life forward. So it's paying attention to how we're being received. The third circle, the ways of speaking, is really cultivating our internal observer. It is saying, okay, the words we use, the conversations we're in, the questions we ask, the stories we tell, they all make a difference. They all matter. And it may seem at times like we're really sort of drowning in words these days with all the, not only our words with friends and family, but electronic words and emails and texts and tweets and TV and all of it. But we do say that what we say matters. In the same way that our moods and emotions matter, what we say matters. So it is, again, overall the cultivation of an observer for each of these three areas. I'm being aware of how I be inside myself, and I'm learning how to manage that. I'm aware of what I'm doing in the world and being attentive to how others are responding to me. And being aware of the influence of my words, that every time really that I sort of pass air over teeth and tongue, something's moving in the world. I am influencing not only what's going on inside me, but how life shows up around me. So those are the, that's the working definition, is sort of cultivating these distinct ways of being and doing and speaking.
Wow, that's beautiful.
And it seems so important that they overlap.
Yes.
That being aware and just how am I being received. Also, what really hit me is when you can really turn care and compassion into action.
Yes.
So wonderful. I guess I would just call it a model for how to be, how to cultivate these ways of being, doing, and speaking. Can you share with us some of the benefits of these practices?
Sure.
People like to know.
Yeah, the practices themselves, I'll give you some examples in a few minutes, but it's not unlike, you know, exercising new muscles. And maybe we could call these cognitive muscles, emotional muscles, speaking muscles, but it's not unlike taking on an exercise routine for when you step in the gym and some new muscles get worked. As they get better and as they get stronger, one of the things that begins to happen is that more quickly we're able to get to what I call the choice point. So if we have our observer in place, then really it's synonymous with having choice. In other words, I have a choice about how I'm going to respond internally to this. I have a choice about what I'm going to do on the outside. And I have a choice about what I'm going to say. So for me, that's the marker of having an observer in place. And one of the ways that we describe it, it's like at the end of the day, if I'm in practice and I'm cultivating these particular ways, at the end of the day, what's up? What's so? And one of my colleagues, John Sullivan, I thought said it very nicely when we were working together at the Maryland University of Integrative Health. He said two things. At the end of the day, what's so? First is less unnecessary suffering. And less unnecessary suffering really means that we're not contributing as much suffering to the world as we may have in the past. So with these practices in place, we're reducing the amount of unnecessary suffering. And at the same time, we're increasing the possibilities for the life that we share with each other. So those are the two that, to me, has always stood as the foundation of these practices and how to sort of gauge their effectiveness. At the end of the day, is there less unnecessary suffering in my own life and the lives of those around us? And some greater possibilities have shown up that may not have been there before.
And wow. I like that. It's being able to hold, you know, looking at less suffering and also the opening, though, of possibilities.
Yes.
A really nice way to kind of close a day, I think, thinking that. So thank you for
and
sharing
maybe
that.
Maybe even starting the day thinking, you know, what can I bring into the world and how are ways I'm not going to make others suffer because I'm in it.
That's right. Well, I can give you a few examples of the practices that have evolved over time and practices that I share with other people when I do facilitation or give a workshop. So again, we could sort of take a walk around these three circles and ways of being. So one of the practices we offer to people is really the notion of designing your mood. And how we invite people to do this is the very first thing in the morning, even before your feet hit the ground, declare a positive mood for the day. So maybe that mood is patience, maybe that mood is calmness, maybe it is simply joy or love. And then be observing throughout the day, what is it that moves me out of the mood, and how do I find myself back to it? And it's quite surprising that when we put that background in the day and call ourselves back to it on a regular basis, it's fascinating to see, you know, how sometimes we very easily get moved out of a positive mood. But that's one way to begin to really be in touch with what's going on each day, but also have it be done by intention and by declaration to say, you know, I'm going to be patience today, and then see how the day goes. And I think you'll find that the day goes quite different. The other one that I might point to from the ways of being, and it's just simply called to be what is missing. In other words, whatever domain you're in, maybe you're sitting around the dinner table with your family, or you're in a conversation with a friend, or you're in a staff meeting at the workplace, if you feel and sense that something is showing up missing, then you be the one to bring it to bear. So if, for example, a simple acknowledgement is showing up missing in the workplace, well, what would it be like for you to be the one to provide the acknowledgement? Or if decisiveness is needed in a particular situation and everybody's sort of stumbling and fumbling to make a decision, what if you step forward boldly and said, this is where we're going? So to be what is missing, to bring that forth from inside out. If we move to the ways of doing circle, one of the ways we describe it is to say, take an effective action or let it go. So in other words, in response to what's going on around us, what's an effective action here? What would help to keep life moving in a forward direction? And either take that action or let it go. So when, well, this is used a lot of time when we are in a bit of a squawk or we are upset about something, some behavior of some other person or the direction a meeting is going and we're sitting there sort of fuming. And to really, again, it's like, okay, is there something here that can be done to help life move forward? Or maybe it's not big enough to worry about. Maybe it's not a big enough concern. And if that's the case, then let it go. So in other words, either do take an effective action or let it go. And if it comes up again, then maybe you take an effective action later on. The doing circle in particular really calls us to being a beginner. And the students in the programs at MUIH really are introduced to the notion of being a lifelong learner, that no matter what stage of life we're at, there is more to learn. There's new situations and events that we face that we've never had to face before. There are relationships that keep changing. A spouse or a partner begins to move away a bit or distance themselves. Maybe somebody comes closer and a friend becomes a lover, or maybe a boss that you really love moves away and the new boss, not quite the same. So we're always being beginner. There's three different ways that I point to. One is to new situations and events. The second area is really changing relationships. And the third is that we're beginners at new phases of life. And I'm calling this my Medicare year. I'm turning 65 this year, so I'm needing to sign up for Medicare. So what am I going to do? You know, this is new for me. I've never been 65 before. I'm very aware that I'm not living in quite the same body that I was when I was 20 years old, and different faculties maybe are diminishing and capacities, you know, reducing. So I'm a beginner at really moving into this next phase. And I learned this a great deal. It was back actually in 1992 when my mother was dying. She was living near Binghamton, New York. I was 3,000 miles away living in California. And I came back. She passed away. I came back for her funeral. And, of course, it's just, you know, mild chaos. And people were bringing plates of food and dropping them off on the front stoop and ringing the bell. And we were going to be burying her outside, and there was going to be a ceremony outside. It's December. It's snowing. I have no winter coat. My brothers have no winter coats. And I really got, it's like we're making this up as we go along. We're beginners here. And it sounds like a strange phrase to say, but it's like I'm a beginner at having my mother die. And I certainly watched my father as he moved into this new phase, and certainly he was a beginner as well. So the speaking circle, many distinctions to be made, many practices that can be taken on, the distinction between using language to describe phenomena compared to using language to create the stories around it. The phenomena is really what we receive through our senses, the facts, so to speak. And the stories make all the difference in the world. You could sort of imagine this as two concentric circles, phenomena at the middle, and then stories, our conclusions, our interpretations are all gathered around the outside. And the story we create makes all the difference in the world. The phenomena is what it is, and how am I going to use my words, and what story will I create? The challenge that we offer to the students in the programs is, what is the story that is big enough for all of us to live in, no matter what the situation? A story that all of us...
Oh, would you say that again?
That was very powerful.
Yeah,
well,
say that again.
Yes, that the challenge for all of us, no matter what situation we're facing, is, what is the story that we can create about this that is big enough for all of us to live in?
Mm-hmm.
So that each of us and everyone who's involved is able to show up fully with their full potential and all of their gifts they can bring to bear.
Mm-hmm. Wow,
beautiful.
This is... So we're talking about these concentric circles,
mm-hmm.
of the being, doing, and speaking, and you really have shared with us practices and information. And one that I've kind of been doing, but I'm going to be dedicated again. I've done it a little bit different way. When you said design your mood, you know,
mm-hmm.
at the beginning of the day. And I'm taking away so many things from what you've already said, but I'd like to know if there are some final thoughts, some things you really would like to share that maybe we haven't asked about.
Well, the whole notion of practice is really something, you know, what we've asked students to do in the past and what I encourage people to do that I do workshops with is really to take on a practice for a week. So you really could say, okay, so for a week, I'm really going to focus on taking effective action or let it go. So
mm-hmm.
if whatever situation I'm in, and especially one that might be a concern or a squawk or whatever, it's like, is this worth taking an action about, or am I going to let it go? So any of the things that you can turn into practices, take them on for a week. And at the same time, to provide reminders to yourself. Students have gotten very creative, like, because we will fall asleep during the day. We'll forget that we even decided to do a practice. Events outside us will call our attention elsewhere, and we'll totally forget that we were taking on a practice for a day. So they do fun things. They will put a pebble in their pocket. So every time they put their hand in their pocket, they'll go, well, what is that for? Oh, I'm in practice. Or somebody will put their watch on the other wrist, or put a ring on a different finger, or put a colorful Band-Aid on their hand so they see it many times during the day. People use Post-its. You can put them on your bathroom mirror. You can put them on your computer at work. Phones and computers have alarms. You could set it to go off every hour, and they're wake-up calls throughout the day. Because we can and do, we'll fall asleep, we'll go back into default mode. So these are just ways that call us back to the practice that we've taken on. The wonderful thing about being a healing presence is you don't have to go back to school. You don't need any new kit or degree. You don't need a license to be a healing presence. It goes back to that notion, I think, of telos. The Greek word for the sake of. And for me, part of having a meaningful life is that recognition, you know, that we don't just live for ourselves, that we can be purposeful and intentional in engaging in all the relationships around us and to take on and forwarding life in whatever domain we find ourselves in. So it's been a key piece of how we've trained the acupuncturists and the other students for a long time. It's like to not just be a healing presence in the treatment room or in the consult with your client or patient, but to be a healing presence in your whole life, that's sort of the spirit that you come to life with, and to say, you know, how can I be of assistance here? So that's a big part of it. Those are my final thoughts.
Oh, well,
wow.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. So if people want to learn more about this topic, I'd like to know, what do you recommend? And also, how can our listeners get in touch with you if they want more information?
Well, the two ways, the two books that I've written, they are distinct. The first one I wrote, Dancing with the 10,000 Things, was really written, it's for being a healing presence in all domains. So there are practices from the being and doing and speaking, and it goes deeper into some of the Chinese philosophical traditions, the what's called the Wuxing, the five elements of Chinese medicine, and the many gifts and capacities and qualities that arise from there. So that's meant for working in all domains. The second book I wrote, just finished it this year, so Becoming a Healing Presence, and that was really meant for more so the one-on-one relationships that we have with others that we're tending to. So I think it is broad enough. There are things in there that would certainly serve healthcare professionals to be aware of, but also people who do volunteer work in terms of hospice or emergency rooms. And also many of us, and this is going to be true of many of us, we will find ourselves at times caretakers and people, part of teams, who tend people who are in need. So we have the baby boomer population. We have a large segment of the population that is aging and will become ill and go through the dying process. And it's for, as Linda said at the very beginning, it's like, how do I carry on these conversations? Even as a layperson, how can I be with what's going on? What can I do to assist? And how do I speak? What do I say? What do I say to a dear friend who is ill and maybe close to death? And all of these practices come to bear. So these books, both of them are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and they're available in Kindle and Nook versions. If you want to, my website is www, and then it's my first name, Tom, T-O-M, and my last name, B as in boy, A-L-L-E-S, and it's .com. And my email address is there, and I'll give it to you here as well. It's my name again, TOMBALLES, the numeral 1, and it's at yahoo.com. So I want to say thank you so much, Dawn and Linda, both, for having the opportunity to share a little bit about this work that's been evolving at MUIH for quite some time, and it's a passion of mine. And I think it's going to be very important work as we proceed in this next period of time. So thank you so much.
I totally agree with you. And grateful that you are stepping out on the edge here, helping us go into this new way of being. And I like the idea of being a beginner.
Absolutely.
I think I am. Right,
well,
now.
And all we need to do is to look at the headlines from day to day, you know, and to, you know, what's present tense even in the political discourse. We are in brand new territory, and we are all beginners. Life is changing so quickly and so profoundly, and all of us are really beginners. We have a lot to learn about how to continue to be with each other and be here for the sake of each other. So thank you again.
Again, my heart's open, and I so appreciate your sharing today. And as we're beginning to close now, that leads us to announcements. And I'd like to start by saying so much is happening in the Annapolis area in the next few weeks. A couple of them coming up on Sunday, March the 13th, Dr. Stephanie Porter, she's a naturopathic doctor, will be presenting on spontaneous healing, tapping your inner pharmacy. And Dennis Cole will be the musician and will be playing and singing songs that touch our souls. So if you're in the Annapolis area on Sunday, March 13th, love for you to join us. The website where the information is www.actannapolis, all one, actannapolis.org. And you can also find information about Dr. Christine Page's upcoming visit to Annapolis She's going to be presenting on April the 16th. We have a full day with her. I'm so excited. Her topic is Embracing the Mystery, Intuition, Inspiration, and Magic. And I've known Christine. She's been a teacher of mine over the years. She is definitely an intuitive way shower, and who's also a medical doctor, and originally from England. So if you're in the Annapolis area on April 16th, join us. Again, more information can be found out about that on the ACT website that I just gave, actannapolis.org. And Dawn, I think you have some announcements, and then...
Yes, over here on the other side of the country in Arizona, I have an advanced Reiki training class on May 21st, and that's going to be in the Scottsdale area. And I have a Karuna 1 class the beginning of June, and that's also in Scottsdale. And on April 3rd, right outside of Sedona, I will be teaching a cord cutting class. And you can find all the information on these classes on my website at energytransformations.org. And that's Energy Transformations with an S on the end, .org. And also, I offer a free newsletter that comes out quarterly. And if you sign up for it on my website, you will receive a free chakra meditation that you can download. So, Tom, I just want to thank you so much for your valuable words. I'm going all the way back to the beginning of what you shared with us today about being the needle when speaking about acupuncture and telling your students to go out there and be more and just be that needle, that presence that's making a difference in people's lives. Just want to thank you for giving me that image to carry with me. It just seems as if everyone can be a healing presence, and you've begun to give us that roadmap to moving into that consciousness to be embodying that healing presence. So thank you so much. And for more information on the topic, I just want to say it again for our readers to have the information that Tom's book is Becoming a Healing Presence, a Guide for Those Who Offer Care. And a category that I was thinking of when you were saying for people who may be interested in the book are there are so many holistic health practitioners out there, and I think this would be a beautiful book for them to read as well.
Well, great. Thank you very much. Absolutely.
It is.
Yeah, anybody who really is, a kind of healthcare professional, as well as those who volunteer, and for those of us who will find ourselves being lay people and needing to step up to bat with those who are need tending around us. So thank you again, both of you. It's a pleasure to have been here.
Thank you,
You're
Tom.
Welcome. And, you know, we never know when that moment is going to be when we're being called to be that presence. So we may as well get into the training mode now to become, to embody that energy of a healing presence.
Great.
So before we close, I want to just have everyone take a deep breath. And I've got these wonderful quotes by Mother Teresa. And these quotes I really feel like are for us to be a healing presence. So just take in a slow, deep breath. Kind words can be short and easy to speak, but their echoes are truly endless. Every time you smile at someone, it is an action of love, a gift to that person, a beautiful thing. Let no one ever come to you without leaving better and happier. Be the living expression of God's kindness. Kindness in your face, kindness in your eyes, kindness in your smile. In loving one another through our works, we bring an increase of grace and a growth in divine love. Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste.